Well, close to once upon a time. There was once, right? There was once a beggar who said, you know what, I need one of these microloans, but Kiva or one of those companies, they haven't been started yet. So instead, who does the beggar go to when he wants to start some kind of business effort? He goes to the wealthy merchant in town. And he promises to repay the loan back at the end of 2 weeks. That's his plan. Of course, 2 weeks pass, and another 2 weeks. But the beggar, he's not able to repay his debt. And to the wealthy merchant, it had been pennies. But to the beggar who could not raise it, it was a fortune that he could not possibly imagine finding once again. So at last, after weeks and weeks, the wealthy merchant finds the beggar in the marketplace and demands, "Have you my money to return?" But the beggar answered, "No, I don't." "In that case," said the rich man, "you must come with me before the courts, and the judge will decide what shall be done with you." At once the townspeople knew what had happened, because we all know how, even though we shouldn't do Lashon Hara gossip, that doesn't really stop it from happening yet. And certainly in a small town, that gossip went everywhere. And so everybody knew what was going on. And most of them were probably siding with the underdog, but the beggar, but they didn't say so. So, of course, they gather in the courtroom. Everybody came to see what would happen. And the wealthy merchant goes to the judge and says, "Come and judge a case of law." Much simpler to try to get a court date. So the judge puts on his black hat, his judge hat, and his robe, and sits behind the table. And so the courtroom was filled with everyone from the town, as I said, and everyone listened as the merchant told of the loan and the broken agreement, and then they heard the beggar tell of how he really tried to start that business, but it just failed, and he couldn't raise enough money to pay the debt. And suddenly, when everybody hears the story for real, everybody's whispering and talking, "The merchant doesn't need that money. What's the matter with him? Doesn't he have any rahmanas, any compassion? It's such a small amount." But the judge calls out, "Silence! I'm wearing a black hat, I can call out silence and you must listen." It's amazing the power of a black hat. "Now I will pronounce the verdict," said the judge. "The beggar must return the money he owes immediately. This is the law, and this is what the law requires." And the people were shocked and dismayed. But before they could open their mouth again, something even more surprising happened. The judge took off his black hat and turned it upside down. And he said, "Now that the law has been taken care of, it's time to collect charity. It's time to collect tzedakah from all of you to help this man pay for his loan, to pay for his debt. That is mercy, that is justice, and that is what is required." Justice from a Jewish perspective is not just law. Justice requires significantly more. Justice from a Jewish perspective requires both law and compassion. It requires that we go beyond, not that we break, but that we go beyond whatever systems are in place to go to that extra level of love. Because as we are told, "Ve'ahavta l're'acha kamocha," you shall love your neighbor as yourself. In our Torah portion this week, we have the parsha that many folks know of Korach, where you have Korach. He's a Levite, and you know, you had the priests. The priests were the ones who did the sacrifices in the temple, and the Levites were the ones who carry things around. They're responsible. They're like the stagehands of the temple, which is very, very important. But Korach and his buddies, they're kind of fed up with this. They said, "Moses, Aaron, who picked you to get to do those jobs? Shouldn't we all be able to take part?" And he gets a whole lot of people to agree with him, even though it was pretty clear that God picked Moses and Aaron. Like, it's not just that they were democratically elected. They weren't. But God picked them, and God kind of showed miracles to show that God had the authority to do so. And they're welcome to go back to Egypt if they don't like it, right? And so they come up with this plan, and they say, okay, we're going to bring incense offerings to God. Korach, you and your buddies, you can bring incense offerings, and whoever lets up that incense, or whoever's incense gets taken by God, they are the rightful leaders of our people, and whoever is wrong will have to face the consequences. And so, of course, they come together, and Moses and Aaron are chosen, and God says, after Moses calms God down a little bit, because God just kind of wants to wipe out everyone again, Moses says, no, just the specific people. And so the ground, the curse says, so they shouldn't even get the punishment that normal men would get. Because then that would just be normal. They're going against God here, so it should be a godly punishment. So what happens? The earth actually opens up and swallows Korach and the people who are with them, because not only were they taking their ego in and letting that get in the way of the holiness of the camp, but they were trying to bring other people with them. But then, what's amazing is, after seeing this happen, after having witnessed so many miracles, oh, by the way, after that happens, then God sets out the normal way that people die on the other people who agreed with them, and sends out a massive fire. So, you know, interesting things happen in the Torah in that regard. But the next day, after seeing these things happen, the children of Israel say, okay, I guess we'll have to respect Moses and Aaron now, right? No! That's not what happens. What they say, all the children of Israel grumbled on the morrow against Moshe and Aaron, saying, it's you who caused the death of the eternal people. That when it was the people coming in and letting egos get in the way, letting differences getting in the way, they wouldn't take responsibility for it. But rather, they then have the audacity to pit it on Moses and Aaron, on somebody else, on their leaders. So what happens? Unfortunately, death. We get another plague, and 14,700 people die. Sorry, 700 people die in the Torah as a result of people refusing to take responsibility. I think that's a pretty stark message, often, that blaming somebody else, when a person is accountable, when a person has some responsibility, ultimately will result in death. Sometimes figuratively, sometimes quite literally. We are all responsible for the problems of our communities. Whether we are the active perpetrators or not, if we are part of a community, we are responsible for what happens in it. We are our brother's keepers, as Cain learned the hard way. Well, Abel learned the harder way. We are their fellows, we are their neighbors, and if we all really wanted change and worked together, there would be change. If we all wanted change enough and worked together, there would be change. As the murders this week of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling and the five police officers, along with all the senseless deaths and fear that continue to plague this nation, demonstrate, racism is a problem. There's prejudice and fear when it comes to blacks in this country, including among our police officers. Overuse of force by the police is a problem, as made clear by the growing number of incidents that we hear about on a regular basis regarding the use of excessive force from our authorities. And prejudice and hatred towards the police is also a problem, as made clear by the so many police officers who are simply trying to do their jobs and lives of protecting us all, they themselves trying to stay alive and going beyond, like those at that rally in Dallas, to work with protesters to ensure safety and peace. These are very, very real problems that are, in fact, all of our problems as people who live in this country. It is our problem. They are. How do we react to them? And there seem to be different responses and reactions across the national spectrum and in all of our communities. Some of us want to do something about it and are unsure of what to do. Some of us are speaking our minds about it and feel like we're slamming our heads against brick walls on a regular basis. Some of us are blaming the systems, feeling like nothing can be changed. Some of us deny that there are problems. We blame the victim. We blame politics. We say it's too hot to touch. We blame education. We blame poor family values or ethics or guns. We find things to blame. And some of us refuse to address these issues because we don't want to offend anyone or make anyone uncomfortable. Here's the thing, though. When we refuse to help or engage and simply let the legal system do what it needs to do and hope that it will do it well, we're putting the problem that is very much our problem onto somebody else. We're trusting that the system will handle it and letting it off of our hands. And when it goes wrong, we blame society's heads, or the victims, or both. And not engaging in the act of compassion that's needed beyond that for those whose lives are ripped from them. Justice through law alone is not justice. Jewishly, justice is a combination of the basic law that holds us together as a society and assures us our basic freedoms and decencies, but it needs so much more. Justice also, from a Jewish perspective, requires that balance of compassion, grace, and mercy to take us so much further, to go beyond just allowing us to live and enabling us to live together and with God. Compassion requires that we stop thinking about the larger problems we have with those with whom we disagree, because it's so easy to get caught up in those. And first, think about, empathize, and put ourselves in the shoes of those on all sides who were cut down this week. And when we have stood in their shoes, really stood, and made as strong a case as possible to ourselves about why they were human beings, defending them before trying to point any blame, why they were human beings made in that divine image, why they all had a place in this world, then not only will we want to address the problem to prevent further acts like this in the future with something that is not simply more blunt force, we will existentially need to, because if we love another human being, I don't mean in the general, I mean in the specific, then we need to look out for them in our souls. And I firmly believe that the first step to repairing this broken nation is to stop pointing fingers, because that clearly has gotten us nowhere. It is to find love and compassion for every other human being we can find. I often finish Divrei Torah with a kind of prayer. And I say something along the lines of, let us now remember. Remembering is useless at this point. Remembering has not gotten us far. Rather, I'm going to ask something else. I'm going to ask that we take the first step in solving this crisis, which is forming bonds and relationships between sides, in actually developing the parts of us that love, that have compassion and mercy, and using these parts towards the other. To actually get to know in our hearts, not just in our minds, those on all sides of this awful plague. That first step that I'm asking of us all is that we make sure to get to know those in the African American communities to the point where we feel love in our hearts for them. and that we get to know police officers in our community so that we feel love in our hearts for them as well. Only when this happens, I believe, will that impetus really be there that will actually force us to make a difference. There is no justice without love and compassion. And so this week, this month, this year, go and build and maintain and improve as many good, strong, compassionate relationships as we can with people who you think you would never develop those relationships. If it's easy to develop that relationship, then you're not working hard enough. And this way, we will pursue justice not through complaining to politicians, lawmakers, and journalists, but rather by our own hands. As many of you know, I don't believe in praying for anything that we ourselves are unwilling to do something about. The rabbis teach us to act as if we will never be saved by a miracle, that we can't count on them. And I don't think we will, because God has already given us the tools to solve this. There's no miracle coming because we got what we needed. We have our brains, we have our hearts, we have our humanity, and we have our Torah to guide us. The only prayer I will offer on this is this. May you, O God, grant us the strength and wherewithal to do whatever it takes to end this awful crisis of hate and violence. And may you sway the hearts of those of us whose hearts still need swaying to start doing the work that so badly needs to be done. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Justice, justice must we pursue. May this senseless killing come to a stop. And may love for all individual human beings reign strong.